Welcome to Venturesome, the podcast about being fiercely ambitious, brave, and curious. I'm Rachel Esterline Perkins, and we're talking about how to get a step ahead in your career. This podcast is all about taking risks, overcoming uncertainty, and being creative in our lives and careers. In this episode, I talk to Morgan, my fearless nomadic friend who has spent much of her post-grad career traveling the world rather than sitting in a cubicle. I hired Morgan as an intern in 2013, and in this episode, we talk about her path, from college to leaving a first job that wasn't a fit, camping in a tent across Alaska, and her new role as a recruiter at a logistics company. She shares advice from the perspectives of both a recruiter and a risk taker. If you enjoy this episode, I hope you'll check out Venturesome on Patreon at patreon.com/venturesomepod. You'll find special resources, including a career advancement workbook, templates, and worksheets.
Rachel, you've always been such a good mentor to younger people, you know, and you've always had this ability to take people in under your wing and then guide them to what their version of success is. You know, not what you think they should be doing or not what society thinks is best, but what is truly best for them. And I've always really admired that about you. I think that's really cool.
Aw, thank you. You like give me goosebumps. It's not about what I think you should do. You know, like you've always been a strong writer and communicator, but then, you know, you found other ways to use those skills in your life and to have a lot of fun doing it. So let's talk about where you started at CMU, because you had several different paths when you were a student there. And I remember, I believe, neuroscience, PR, journalism, fashion. You know, you had a lot of varied interests. So tell me a little bit about that college experience and kind of where you thought you were headed before we get into where you ended up in your career.
Yeah, absolutely. So I started off my journey as a young, excited, ambitious college student thinking I wanted to do neuroscience with a minor in chemistry. And actually, as you know, as of today, I think I'm only two classes away from completing a minor in chemistry, which is hilarious to most people who know me. They're like, what? But yeah, so I started off neuroscience. I always loved math and science, and I liked the idea of being able to help people, and I really liked the idea of learning about how the brain functions. I think that's very cool. And actually, I'll circle back around to that because with my current interest in nutrition, it all comes back to the gut and the brain and health. I've come full circle, really. But so I started off my journey at CMU doing that. But I actually, and I've never talked about this before, I was really put off by one of my advisors. Even before anything happened with my family, I had this advisor who was really negative. And I don't know if he was old and bitter or if he was trying to prepare me for the reality of what I was getting myself into, but he essentially told me if I didn't want to live and breathe science and research and medicine and didn't want to, and if I wasn't prepared to spend the next 8 to 10 years of my life in school with a single-minded focus on achieving that goal, that I wasn't cut out for the program. And, you know, in hindsight, he was right, because that was not my burning passion, was not to be a neurosurgeon. I was ambitious and wanted to do something and thought that seemed cool. So I started off with that, but I've always been very interested in fashion. I love clothes. I love design. I love putting together combinations that other people would not think of and other people would not necessarily see. And so I did take a few classes in fashion. And again, I had this one teacher and I just didn't like her. She really turned me off to the fashion industry. And again, it was, if you are not willing to live and breathe this, then don't even try. And I am a very happy, very excited person, but I want to do what I want to do. That has been a theme of my life, is I want to follow my direction and I don't want to be locked into the constraints of a traditional industry. I want to have a life outside of my work and I wanted to define myself in many, many ways other than what my career or my job title is. So I didn't pursue that. I kept that as a hobby. So ultimately, the summer after my freshman year of college, my mother got very sick. She had a stroke. It affected a large portion of her brain. And I was able to get up and close personal with neuroscientists and neurosurgeons and hospitals and doctors in a way that I was not prepared for. After seeing what our family went through and seeing what she went through with multiple brain surgeries, I realized that that was not the life for me. So I made a change. And I sat down with the head of the honors program at CMU and I talked with him about my interests and my hobbies. And he said, Morgan, you've always liked to write. You're a strong writer. You're very outgoing. Why not take your interest for fashion, your interest for writing, and your communication skills and switch to public relations? And that's what I did. So I completed my journey at CMU with a degree in the Integrative Public Relations program. And I don't think I had a minor because you didn't need one. And honestly, I had so many other weird little like American Sign Language fashion classes, chemistry classes that I just never finished a minor. So that's what I got my degree in ultimately.
That's awesome. And I think that it says a lot for mentors that they can help drive people to careers and they also can really drive people away. And that's something that I always try to be conscious of is I want people to have good experiences because that can affect them for the rest of their careers. You know, if I react poorly to a mistake that you make, that trauma is probably going to impact your reaction to future mistakes. So it's just really interesting to hear you talk about some of those negative experiences. But I believe you had some positive experiences because you were my intern for 10 months.
Even before that, I went up to you after hearing you speak and thought, this is a person I want as a role model. So I sort of stalked you a little bit.
So did I speak to your IPR 101 class or was it in the journalism classes?
No, it was in my IPR 101. You came in and spoke and presented. I just really admired you. And I was so new to the program. And I've always been a person to seek out mentorship. I've always been a person to seek out leadership because in my opinion, they are a living example of what you can be. And they will, if they teach you what they know, you're going to be so far ahead of everyone else. So I've never been afraid to approach leadership. I do that in my current job all the time. I go out to lunch with the VP of HR and just pick her brain about what she knows about the industry. She's been doing it longer than I have. So I came right up to you after you spoke and I was like, all right, I'm a sophomore, please take me under your wing. And, you know, 2 years later, I became your intern.
That's awesome. I love it when people tell me that they met me in IPR 101 because, I mean, when I was at CMU, I would easily speak to sometimes 10 to 15 classes in a semester. So it always was hard to keep track of where I met certain people. So my first memory of you is getting your cover letter. And I don't know if you remember what your cover letter said, but I still remember what it said. And it started out with, you may have noticed that I have no experience in public relations, but here's why you should hire me.
Yep.
And I loved it because it was gutsy. It was honest. And you were able to position and pitch yourself, which is what you're doing in public relations. And so tell me a little bit about your internship experience. You know, what do you remember learning as an intern at CMU?
I remember, and this is a skill I use to this day, that I considered myself a strong writer before I went into that internship. I considered writing to be one of my best skills. And I came out of that a stronger writer than I could have ever hoped to be. You taught me how to be concise. You taught me how to word things in the most effective way possible. You taught me to deliver messages with a punch and stand out. And you taught me the importance of editing. I'm a stronger editor because I know you. And so really over the course of the internship, I just grew professionally. And also having you as a role model and having you to help guide my future career path and just bounce ideas off of you of where I should go next after college. It was very cool because I remember you really encouraged me to be myself. I'm a very eccentric person. And as an adult, I own that and it makes me unique. But you know, when you're a teenager in college and you're surrounded by all these people who their only desire is to be cookie cutter and you cannot bring yourself to fit in no matter how you try, to have a mentor who encouraged me to embrace what made me different and what made me unusual was so refreshing. And I still take that with me to this day.
I love that. Do you remember when you asked me if you could dye your hair blue?
Yes. Yes, I did.
I remember you're like, could I do this? And I'm like, well, technically, yeah, but you know, there's always the downsides. Like, can I take you to executive meetings if you have blue hair? And I think you were like, yeah, of course. And, you know, it was so fun to answer some of those questions that you had, because interns bring such a fresh perspective, and you have your own intern now, which is really exciting.
I do. They gave me an intern. I couldn't believe it when it happened. Technically, I share him with the department, but he spends a big portion of his day with me. It's very, very exciting.
So what advice do you have for people who are entering maybe their first internship or their first real experience in the workplace?
I would say more than anything to be yourself and to be brave and to ask as many questions as you possibly can. Because there are so many things you can learn from the people who have a little bit more experience or the people who have taken a different career path. Don't try to fit in or don't try to be what you think they want, because they hired you. They want you. There's a reason they picked you above anyone else who applied. You bring something to the table that other people don't have. So embrace that and own it.
You know, I think that is such a great point. Everybody graduates with the same degree, right? Like every single one of your classmates walked out with the same piece of paper. And so it's all about what experiences you had and the experiences that you have afterward and your willingness to try to grow and improve and be brave and curious and ambitious. So I think that's a really great point. So you graduated from CMU, then what?
So then, and I will never forget this for as long as I live, because I graduated in the honors program. And the honors program was full of highly ambitious people. And I myself am a highly ambitious person, but it manifests in different ways than it traditionally does. You know, most people are very driven for titles, for money, for success. I am very driven to chase what I love, which is seeing the world and traveling, and to always do what makes me happy. So as we walked across the stage at the honors graduation, they were announcing different people, and like so-and-so headed to law school, so-and-so headed to medical school, so-and-so is joining the Peace Corps, so-and-so is going into this master's program. And then when it was my turn, I wore a tutu and as I walked across the stage, they said, and here comes Morgan, and she has accepted a position at Walt Disney World. And the only people who clapped were my parents. I'll never forget that for as long as I live, because all of the other parents were like, who is this girl? But I, from CMU, I caught a flight directly to Florida, and I went to work for Walt Disney World for the next year. I did their college program, which is essentially an internship. But what they do is they place you in any aspect of the resort where they need help. And I ended up in the food and beverage program, which actually for me was a huge benefit, because it launched me into the next chapter of my life, which was my bartending and travel phase. And having Walt Disney, that food experience on my resume opened up a lot of doors for me. But that's where I went next, is I went to work and play at the most fun place on earth.
You also had a stint at a small online company too. So I don't know where that fell in the timeline, but I remember you were interviewing there. You were interviewing for a PR job in Las Vegas. You were trying to choose between the two of them, and you ultimately chose the remote job. But I know you didn't stay long either. So tell me a little bit about that decision, because I remember you messaging me. If I dug back into our Facebook messages, I'm sure I could find it where you were trying to make this decision and when you ultimately made that decision.
So while I was at Walt Disney World, I was receiving all of these emails that everyone from CMU gets from Wojcik with current openings. And there were two that stood out to me. I didn't really have a burning desire to join the workforce right away. After being at school for 4 years, I wasn't entirely sure which aspect of PR I liked. I wasn't really ready to commit myself to a full-time job. But there were two jobs that really caught my eye. And the first one was a remote position where you could work. She had, I think, 6 or 7 states listed where you could work, and you could work from home. And to me, that sounded like an amazing job. I could live anywhere in the US I wanted. I could travel. I could schedule my hours accordingly. And I could still get experience in my field. It just seemed like the best of both worlds. And the other job that sounded good to me was doing PR for a resort, a hotel chain in Las Vegas. And that was, I'm very extroverted. I love, you know, being around people. And that seemed like a really unique opportunity. I've always wanted to live my life sort of outside the box. I like doing the non-traditional things. And that seemed like an adventure and really drew me. So I ended up applying for both. And I was offered both, and I had a very big decision to make. Do I take this job that offers more glamour in Las Vegas and offers more adventure, or do I take this job that offers more freedom and offers me the ability to really expand my work-life balance by being able to work remotely? And ultimately, I chose the remote one so I could stay at Walt Disney World and finish out my time there. And I thought it was a win-win because I could work at Walt Disney at night and do the dinner shifts. I could work at this remote job during the day, and I could get experience in public relations while still enjoying the magic of being at Disney and, you know, keeping my life in Florida. But ultimately, it wasn't a good fit. I just did not bond well with the owner of the company, who was also my manager. I didn't form any good connections with the other girls. I never felt part of the company. And the work they assigned me bored me. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I was bored out of my mind. And it wasn't a good fit. And I'm a very loyal person. And I will stay at a job if I love it. It takes a lot for me to leave, but if it's not a good fit for me, I don't want to waste my time and I don't want to waste the company's time. I don't believe in that. So I told the owner after 2 months, I said, look, I gave this a good run, but this is not for me. I'm very sorry. Thank you for the opportunity, but I am going to continue my career path elsewhere. And that was for me another, you know, if Disney was my first step along the path of where my career would go next, turning down what my parents called my first real job and making the decision to walk away from that, even though on paper, it was a great job. It was good experience. It was following that traditional career path that you're encouraged to take. That was another big step for me on saying, no, I'm going to do what makes me happy. And right now that is non-traditional.
I really love that you had the courage to say no when something, even though it was right on paper, it just wasn't the right fit for you, because you could have stayed in that job. You could have kept doing the work. You could have continued to travel the world, but you know, it wasn't something that you enjoyed. And I remember that was one of the things you told me. You were like, I don't like writing about this stuff. Like, I love to write. And you know, you had written for me for close to a year and you just were like, this isn't it. And I think even people, I don't know if you remember the interview, but I know a lot of times I've even had that gut feeling in an interview where I'm like, this isn't a fit. And I think a really good example is earlier this year when I was interviewing for jobs, I interviewed with a company that on paper was absolutely perfect. It used all of my skills in communications and public relations, and it tied to higher education. I have a master's degree in higher education. I've worked in higher ed. I like higher ed. And it felt off in the phone interview, and I brushed it off as, phone interviews can be weird. Felt off in the Zoom interview with the full team the whole time. Felt like it wasn't a fit. I didn't feel like I was clicking with the team. I didn't completely agree with all of their philosophies on things. And so I emailed Wojcik, of course, because he's the person you always email. And for those of you listening who don't know Wojcik, he is a beloved advisor at CMU who has now been there for over 50 years, if you can believe that. And I was like, I don't think this is a fit. Even if they offer this to me, even though I really want to make a move right now, I don't think I'll take this job. And so they called me and they're like, we're really excited. We wanted to offer you the position. Are you still interested? And I was like, I'm really sorry, but something is telling me that this is not the right job for me. It's a gut feeling. I can't give you any more reason than that. I have no other reasons. Everybody seems really nice. And I described it to my friends as being on The Good Place. I don't know if you've watched The Good Place on Netflix, but yeah, so Kristen Bell ends up in The Good Place and she's like, I don't belong here. These are all really, really good people. And I just don't belong here. And that's how I felt interviewing for that job. They were all really great people. They had a great mission. It was right here in the city that I live in. And I turned it down, even though I was interviewing for several other jobs, but they were not a guarantee. It was entirely possible. I would not have gotten the positions. And two of them I did not get. The third one I did. And I ended up taking the job and it ended up being a really great fit. A lot of people, I think, are scared to make that decision because they're afraid I'll never get a job offer again, or I'll burn a bridge because, you know, I had known the person that you had been in that remote job with too. So, you know, you have that fear. And I think you had messaged me about it. Like, I just wanted to let you know that I was leaving this job. And so you have to be really brave. And I think that's really important.
I think too, I think that there's a lot of pressure in our society to stay at jobs for, you know, a specific amount of time for your resume, where if you don't stay at the job for a year or 2 years, it reflects really poorly on you. When if it's not a good fit, it's not a good fit, and you shouldn't stay at a place that's not good for you. Or if you're unhappy, you know, you shouldn't force yourself to stick it out for a year just so you can put it on your resume. You know, in your next interview, just explain it wasn't a good fit for you, or just be honest and just know that there are a lot of jobs out there, and it might take you a little longer to find the right one, but it's like dating. It is so worth holding out for that good fit.
That's a really great point. So from 2015 to 2020, you traveled the world. You worked at a lot of different places and a lot of different types of jobs. So give us a little bit of a summary of what you were doing during those 5 years of adventure where you were like, I'm not doing the traditional 9-to-5. I am going to do what makes me happy.
Well, I think for me, a big part of that stemmed from watching my mom go through what she went through when I was 18. You know, I was 18 when she had her stroke and she was 45. And overnight, her life changed forever. You know, no more traveling for her, no more working for her. Like she had to, she thought she had all this time. That's a trap we all fall into. We all assume that we have time. And from a very young age, you know, 18 is very impressionable. I realized that that is not guaranteed. And if you have goals that you think you're going to do later in life, you should just do them now. Don't wait. And so I really wanted to travel. When I was young, my very first job ever was at the public library. And I used to get in trouble because they would find me in the travel section sitting on the floor reading books about Africa. And they'd be like, Mo, get back to work. I always had this dream of getting out there and just seeing what the world had to offer. And so I knew that that was something I really wanted to do. And I didn't want to wait to make it happen. So from Disney, I had an opportunity to go up to Alaska and I took it. I applied for a job with Princess Cruise Lines. They hired me and I went up to Alaska to work as a waitress in one of their hotels. And I loved Alaska. Oh my gosh. From the second I got off the plane and saw the mountains and then on the bus up to the resort, which is in the middle of nowhere, I thought, this is amazing. This is the US. This is not real. I'm from Michigan. I'm from a small rural town in the middle of cornfields. I've never seen a mountain in my life. And so I was up there. I made it, you know, 6 weeks at that job. And I realized that the dream they had sold me of being able to see Alaska on my days off and explore the state and hike and swim and kayak was not a reality, not in the work schedule they had set up for us. And so I took a huge leap of faith. I took all the money I had saved. I bought a tent. I bought a small pickup truck that my roommate and I found on the side of the road. I quit my job and I spent the next 6 months road tripping Alaska, living in a tent. And I loved every minute of it. And my family thought I was nuts. I think I had like $2,000 to my name. I lived off of a box of granola bars for a week straight. I just rationed them out. But I was living my dream. I was free. So I spent that whole summer up in Alaska. And when I ran out of money and it started getting really cold and dark, I found a job bartending at this hotel that also offered me a room. So then I lived in a hotel in Alaska for a while. And when my roommate left, I decided maybe it's time for me to leave too. And I had some money saved at that point in time. And a good friend of mine offered for me to go along on a trip to Europe with her. She was in between jobs. She had 2 weeks off. She was itching to go to Europe. So I agreed. I bought a plane ticket to Paris and off I went. I was in Europe for a while. And at that point, I had been nomadic, living out of a suitcase for almost a year. And I just really missed having a living room. I really missed having a place to sit. You don't realize how much you take your living room for granted. You don't have living rooms in a tent. I had another good friend from school and I was always very connected on social media, and she reached out to me via social media and she said, I need a roommate. Would you be interested in coming to Detroit? And at that point I had been gone from Michigan for 2 years. I had been living out of a suitcase for a year. I had been to multiple countries, multiple states. And I thought, you know what, maybe this is the best of both worlds. I'll go to Detroit. I'll stay for a year. I'll get a job bartending and I'll travel. And Detroit became my home for the next 3 years. I found out there's a lot of cheap flights from the airport. I found a great job and I spent the next 3 years bartending and buying a one-way plane ticket. So my motto was always work hard, play hard. When I was home in Detroit, I would work 60 hours weeks. I would, you know, work doubles at the restaurant every day. I would save all of my money. I had this jar with all of my living expenses labeled. And once that jar was full and I had some money set aside for savings, anything left when I'm plane tickets. So I've been all over Europe. I've been all over Asia. One of my favorite trips I did, I bought a one-way ticket to India and I bought a one-way ticket home from Thailand. And I had 4 months to get from point A to point B. And I just packed a bag and I started wandering and I explored every inch of Asia I could in the next 4 months. I've been to South America. I've been to different festivals across the world. I went to Carnival in Rio de Janeiro. I went to La Tomatina, which is a food fight in Spain where you throw tomatoes at each other for 3 hours. That was crazy. I probably don't know this, but a tomato can give you a black eye if it hits you hard enough. And after 3 years in Detroit, I was kind of ready for something new. I had a friend that had moved down to the Virgin Islands and he said, Mo, we're hiring. You should come down here. We need you at the bar. And I bought a one-way ticket down there. I had never been there ever. I sold everything I owned in Detroit and I thought, okay, here we go. One-way ticket. I bought a one-way ticket to St. Thomas thinking I would maybe spend the winter down there. And I stayed for the next year and a half. And while I was there, I did a ton of traveling as well. I just would buy a plane ticket. I went to every island I could. I went to a lobster festival in Anagata. That was really cool. I just made sure that all my bills were paid. And then I spent the rest of the time chasing my dream, which was to see the world. So that took me all the way up until COVID, which as we know, COVID really shook up everyone's life. For me, being a very avid traveler, my life ground to a halt. You know, my favorite hobby, my favorite pastime was no longer possible. So I had to switch gears. And so I decided maybe it was time to get back into the workforce in a traditional sense. And it was scary. I started applying for jobs and all I had was bartending experience. And I was that person on the resume who had hopped around. I was terrified. I was like, man, nobody's going to take a second look at me. So what I did was I redid my resume. I completely redid it. I made it very colorful. I put a section in there about my travel experience because I thought that's going to make me more marketable. I thought to myself, what is different about me? Yes, I might not have the traditional work experience, but what do I bring to the table that these companies need? And I highlighted all of that. Talked about my people skills. I talked about the reason my work experience was disjointed was because I had done all this traveling. I talked about different countries I had been to and I managed to land a few interviews. I got a job in Chattanooga and now I live and work in Chattanooga full time.
So tell us a little bit about your current job. Well, and you've had now two jobs in that role since starting in, I believe you said February.
It was a very interesting journey. So when I left the islands, when I left St. Thomas, I went back up to Michigan and I visited my family and I bought a car and I really had no direction. The world was my oyster. Not really. The U.S. was my oyster since there was no flights. And I, at that point in time, I could move anywhere. And that was beautiful, but also terrifying. It's very, your job search is very overwhelming when it's 50 states wide. So what I did was I loaded up my car with all my favorite things and I started driving across the country. And as I drove, I applied for jobs on Indeed, on LinkedIn, anything that interested me, any city that looked cool. I drove to it. I scoped it out. I applied for jobs, did a lot of couch surfing, just was road tripping all over the place, was on the road from November to February. So it was really cool. And while I was in Chattanooga, I saw a listing for an international sales executive. And I thought, bingo. I've been to almost 40 countries at this point. I can sort of speak a few languages. I can talk to anybody. Bartending is sales. This is it. I'm the perfect candidate. I put my resume in. I got an email from the recruiter 30 minutes later. We had a phone interview. He set up an in-person interview. I drove over there and I did not get the job. But the recruiter actually really liked me. So this is for the company I'm at now. It's a logistics company. And he said, no, we've got to have this girl in some way, shape, or form. So he set me up with a different interview for a different role in the same company. So I was in New Orleans at the time. I turned around, I drove back. I went in for a second interview for what was it called, an enterprise coordinator. And an enterprise coordinator, they are like a sort of a customer service rep for a major customer. So if this customer is so big, we do so much for them, so many products for them that they require, you know, 5 or 6 different teammates working in tandem, we're going to have one person be the face. So they came back in for that interview again. I was really excited. I loved it. And I didn't get that job either. So again, the recruiter who I really bonded with, who actually is my current boss, he called me up for a third time. And at this point, I was en route to Texas and I was going to go check out this school in New Mexico that had a master's degree I was interested in. And I thought, man, if this job search really doesn't work out, maybe the answer is to go back to school. Maybe it's time. I've always been a firm believer that your life will take you where it's meant to take you. And if something doesn't work out, you're not supposed to be there. So don't stress about it because you're going to end up where you're supposed to be. So I thought, okay, Chattanooga is not my home, not the answer. Maybe working isn't the answer. And the recruiter called me. He said, hey, we have a third team. And I said, oh God. He goes, no, listen. This manager is specifically looking for a woman. He's specifically looking for a firecracker. He overheard your interviews. He wants to meet you. It was hard for me. I had been rejected by this company twice. I didn't know if I could swallow my pride and be humble and go in there for a third time. But at the same time, I had nothing to lose. You know, the only thing I had to lose was a little bit of pride. So I turned around, I drove back to Chattanooga for a third time. I interviewed for a spot as a broker, which is a specialized salesperson. And they offered me a job on the spot. That team loved me and I excelled there. So I started my career in logistics as a broker, negotiating deals on the movement of shipping containers. I talked to customers, I talked to truckers, and I priced out shipments and I negotiated the movement of shipping containers from the port or the rail to a warehouse and vice versa. And I found that I was good at it. I was good at talking to people. I was good at selling. I was good at negotiating. I loved it. And I started my role in February of this year. Actually, tomorrow, the 15th, will be, let's see, February through July. What is that? My 5-month anniversary? Tomorrow's my 5-month anniversary with the company. After I had done that for a few months, I had, you know, formed a close bond with the recruiter who was the one who fought for me, stuck up for me all those times. And I was talking to him after work one day, and he mentioned that they were looking to add a member to his team. He was a one-man team. He was doing all the hiring for this company, and we were growing so fast, he could no longer keep up. He had to add a second person. And I said, well, Malcolm, who are you going to hire? And he said, well, ideally you, but I don't know if I can take you away from the brokers. And I just thought about it and it seemed like a perfect role for me. So after a couple of days, I went back to him. I said, look, I'm really interested in doing this. Can we talk about this? And we talked about it. We had meetings and they devised this role, around me and my personality and my skill set. And I started that job on June 1st of this year. So I've now been in recruiting for about 6 weeks and I could not be happier. It's a perfect fit.
I didn't know about all of the rejections that you went through to get to this job. So I really love that you share that because when you are being interviewed and you get rejected over and over and over again, it's exhausting. Interviewing is exhausting as it is. Interviewing and putting your all into a job and then say getting ghosted or just getting rejected is really, really hard. So I appreciate you sharing that. And now that you're a recruiter, I'd love to have you share your advice for people who are searching for a job right now, because you see probably hundreds of resumes. You're on countless phone calls and interviews every day now. So what advice do you have for a job seeker?
I have a lot of advice, but I'll try to keep it very short. I think the number one thing is to make sure your resume is completely updated, completely accurate, because I see so many resumes and their experience ends last year or ends several months ago. And I'm just confused. What have you been doing for the last year? What have you been doing for the last 3 months? Are you currently working? Are you serving? Are you part-time? What's going on? So that's my biggest pet peeve is not knowing, because if you're unemployed, that's okay. If you got laid off, that's okay. Just put that at the top so the recruiter knows what your situation is. And also, if you're applying for a job in an area that you do not currently live, make sure you let the recruiter and the company know that you're interested in relocating. I see resumes from out of state all the time with no cover letter, no email, no nothing. And I are you moving here? Do you think this is virtual? What's going on? The more information you can give a company, the better. And don't be afraid of your situation. If you're not working, that's okay. A lot of people aren't. It's a weird time. But just make sure it's very clear so the person has no questions, because I pass over a lot of resumes because I don't have the time or the interest in reaching out to clarify what's going on.
That's really good advice. What are some things that people have done during their interviews, during a phone interview or a Zoom interview or in person, that makes them stand out to you above all of the others?
I heard one of my favorite questions of all time today. This man we interviewed, we said, "Do you have any questions for us?" And he said, "Yes." He goes, "Okay, so let's say I get the job. And 6 months from now, you say to each other, we need 3 more Joes." He goes, "What have I been doing in the last 6 months that made you say that?" I thought that was very cool, because he's essentially asking us, you know, how best to do the job without asking us that. I thought that was very interesting. And again, this, you know, this seems very basic and very obvious, but the candidates who come in having researched the company, that always stands out, because so many people don't. They don't take the time to learn about our history or even know what we do. And it makes it seem like they don't really want to work here. They just want a job. And maybe that's true, but we want people who want to work here. It stands out when you do your research.
And we talked about this before I was recording a little bit, but how can people respectfully ask for feedback if they did not get the job?
That's one of my favorite things that people do, because that takes a lot of courage. I think just reaching out, in my experience as a recruiter, when people reach out to me and they say, "Hey, thank you for letting me know I was declined. I appreciate the feedback. You know, if you don't mind me asking, what can I do differently? Or what did I do wrong? Or what made me less than an ideal candidate for you, so I know for future interviews?" Because I have no hard feelings. If I declined you, it's not because I didn't like you. It's just because you weren't the best fit of the people we interviewed. So I am happy to give you feedback. I'm happy to tell you, "Hey, your resume wasn't up to date," or, "Hey, you didn't come in with any questions and we didn't feel you were very interested." So just ask. You know, you have nothing to lose by asking the recruiter how you can do better next time, and everything to gain.
One of the questions I like to ask in an interview, I'd love to have your feedback on what you think about it now that you are on the other side of the table, which is funny because I interviewed you at one point. I always like to ask at the end, and usually I ask this when I'm interviewing in person or on the final Zoom call, I like to ask, "Is there anything about me or my experience that gives you any hesitation in hiring me?" I've been told it's a pretty gutsy question to ask. I've had both positive and negative reactions in job interviews. My theory always is, if you don't like me asking tough questions, you're not going to like me as an employee. So that's part of the reason why I like to ask that question. But what do you think as a recruiter about that question?
I love that question. But I myself am a very gutsy individual. And I am the person who asks the tough questions. So I agree. That one could go either way. It depends on the personality of the person recruiting you. But again, I think what job seekers need to remember is that you are interviewing the company too. They're not just interviewing you. You are interviewing them to make sure that they're a good fit for you, just as much as they need to know you're a good fit for them. It goes both ways. So if that's a question you want to ask, ask it. And if their reaction is poor, maybe that's not a company you want to work for.
That was my experience when they reacted poorly. I had one, it was a university, say, "Well, if we had any concerns, we would not tell you." And I thought, okay, well, I appreciate clear communication. And so maybe this job is not a fit for me. And I did not get an offer from them. I also would love to have you share any advice you have on salaries, because salary negotiation is definitely scary for a lot of people. So how can people approach that question with a recruiter and fearlessly ask for what they are worth?
I think it's very important to ask for what you're worth. Now that I'm on the recruiting side and I have seen both sides, I have been on both sides of the table now, in a 6 month period of time. I went from, you know, in January of this year, I was the one interviewing, I was the one negotiating. And here I am now, I'm the one interviewing people. It's been a strange year for sure. But I would recommend asking for what you want, because the worst that can happen is they're going to say no. And I had a mentor once, her name was Rachel. She gave me the best piece of advice that I will now share with everyone. You can negotiate for things besides money. You can negotiate for vacation time. You can negotiate to work from home 1 or 2 days a week. You can negotiate for whatever is important to you. So if money is important to you, ask for it. But if you're okay with a lower salary, but you want more vacation time, negotiate that. Generally speaking, you know, companies have the ability to be flexible. And if we want you, we want you. And we will try to get you. So we might not be able to give you everything you're asking for, but we'll try to meet you in the middle. So ask. The worst they can do is say no.
Absolutely. And I had another former intern. She came after you. She tried to negotiate her salary. They had offered her something crazy like $27,000 a year in Chicago. And I said, you can't even live on that in Chicago. And so I encouraged her to negotiate, and she did. And they revoked the offer. I told her, you dodged a bullet. You don't want to work at a place like that. But, you know, that's just something to keep in mind. There are recruiters who are definitely like you, who are like, absolutely ask the question. And if an offer gets revoked, then it's very likely it was not a good job. At the time, it feels like the world is ending, right? Like you had a job offer in hand and it slipped through your fingers. But that's definitely something I wanted to share as well.
Yes, and that could happen. And, you know, we have done that as a company. We have revoked offers for candidates who came back and their request raised some red flags. It wasn't that they asked for more. It wasn't what, you know, it was just their request themselves. So I would say if you try to negotiate more money and it's a reasonable amount and you lay it out in a professional way, if they revoke your offer, that says a lot more about them than it does about you.
Yeah. And it's important to do your research so you know that it's a realistic amount. And LinkedIn and Glassdoor, there are so many resources out there, as well as just talking to people. I'm always really open with, especially my former interns, but a lot of people in my industry about how much I make, because how can they negotiate their salaries when they're looking for new jobs if they don't know what somebody who is maybe a few years ahead of them or a few years behind them or a peer is making? So you can really use your connections to help figure out how much money you should be making as well.
Absolutely. And make sure you think about your own personal budget and how much money you need to be comfortable. Think about the rent where you live. Think about how much it's going to cost you to relocate if that's going to happen. What do you need to feel comfortable? And make sure that the job is in that range or they're willing to pay you that range, because nobody should have to work multiple jobs to survive.
Definitely. So I think the pandemic has really upended how people feel about their careers and their career paths. So what advice do you have for people who are maybe questioning that traditional 9-to-5 path that you looked at fresh out of college and said, no, this isn't for me? And now I think you were like way ahead of the trend, because now a lot of people are starting to question that. Several years ago, we all were looking at you like, Morgan, you know, we're all working regular jobs and you're traveling the world and you got to have these adventures that have really helped shape your future, I think. So what advice do you have for those people who are like, maybe I don't want this. Maybe I want something different.
Yeah. Everyone kept asking me when I was going to grow up. Now joke's on you guys. I'm just kidding. I think my best advice for people would be to really sit down and isolate what you want and what is important to you. Because for me, with the career path I chose, the most important thing to me was freedom and traveling, not money and not titles. And so those are two things I will most likely never have in my life. I'm never going to be the CEO and I'm never going to be the wealthiest person in the room. And that's okay, because that doesn't matter to me. However, if you are very interested in building a traditional career, think about how best you can leverage what you want your next step to be while still moving towards that goal. So maybe it's going virtual. Maybe it's finding a remote job. Maybe it's negotiating for more vacation time in your next role. I would say if, you know, the 9-to-5 isn't for you, don't force it. Do not follow yourself to force a path that doesn't fit what you want. And with, I think, COVID and everything being turned on its head, I think that there's a lot of room for flexibility these days with remote work. I think that's where the next frontier is. And I think that a lot of us can have the best of both worlds and pursue a career and make a name for ourselves and earn a living while chasing alternative dreams at the same time.
Definitely. I think that's great advice. And what would you say to the 20-somethings who are a little afraid that they're falling behind? I think I hear that fear very often. You know, I'm not where I think I should be. I'm not making what I think I should be at this point in my career. I'm so worried that this one decision has ruined the rest of my future. What do you think about that? Because I think that you're so fearless that you make decisions and figure it out as you go.
Well, I think it's very important not to compare yourself to other people around you. So when I interned with you, Rachel, there were four of us girls. And if you look at where we've all gone, you know, one of us is a very high powered career woman. One of us is a mother and is very happily married. You know, the other chased her dreams to California and is doing amazing work producing out there. And then there's me, the nomadic traveling one, and all four of us are incredibly successful and all four of us are very happy and we're all doing completely different things. I have never allowed myself to feel bad that I don't have children right now. I have never allowed myself to worry that I don't have the same title as one of the other girls we interned with. We're on different paths and that's okay. I'm doing my thing and they're doing their thing. So for people who feel like they're falling behind, you are not falling behind. You are exactly where you need to be and you are doing your career in the way that is best for you. Doesn't matter what other people are doing, you're not them. And for other people who are worried about going down the wrong path or maybe making a mistake, I would say just to make sure you are doing what makes you happy and you're doing what's best for you. So if you feel that changing jobs was a mistake, evaluate, are you happy in this role? Are you enjoying it? Could this lead you to bigger and better things? If not, maybe you should reach back out to your old employers and say, look, I'm sorry I left you. I made a mistake. The grass was not greener. Can we talk about me coming back on? I don't really believe in mistakes. I truly don't. The way I've lived my life, I always have made a decision and I've stuck with it. And at the time, it was very scary. And, you know, all the places I've gone, buying a one-way ticket to St. Thomas was very scary. I had never been there. I knew one person on the island. And I just thought to myself, look, Morgan, if it doesn't work out, you can do something else. And I think that's what people need to remember when they make, you know, changes or they're trying to figure out their next step. If it doesn't work out, it's not the end of the world. I was so upset when I didn't get the international sales job because I thought that was the perfect job for me. And I thought that was the perfect next step. And then I was very upset when I didn't get the next job. And all of those no's led me to one of my favorite jobs I've ever had. And it all worked out the way it was meant to. So I would remind people that a lot of the times you are in the middle of the story, not at the end.
That's great advice. I love it. So my final question is one that I like to ask everyone. Venturesome is all about being fiercely ambitious, brave, and curious. And you are absolutely fearless. You take risks. You don't worry about the uncertainties in life and you're really creative. So I feel like you really fit into what being venturesome is all about. So what venturesome advice would you give to your younger self?
Well, first of all, thank you. That is a huge compliment. If I had to say to young 18-year-old Mo, who is getting on a plane for the first time I ever flew on a plane, I flew to Italy. And I had never even flown before. I didn't know how airports worked. I would tell her to keep being brave and not to listen to what anyone else thought. Because as I've done this non-traditional career path, there have been a lot more naysayers than there have been supporters. And a lot of the time, I was on my own saying to a crowd, no, this is what I want to do. I am happy. What I'm doing right now might not be the way you define success, but it's the way I define success. And I love it. And I would tell her to keep doing that because eventually all those people came around and the people who judged me for being non-traditional or who looked down their noses at me and told me I would never get a real job. I did what I loved and all because the teenage me had the guts to go and do it. And so I would tell her, keep doing it. You're going to make it and you are going to be so damn happy.
And I can't wait to see what you do next, because I know that your path is always going to be your own path. You have never followed the path that someone else says you should go on. So I just love that about you. So I'm so excited to share this episode with people, because I think there are a lot of young professionals who are so uncertain and so scared right now. And they're facing entering a job market that is really interesting, because while there's a lot of opportunities, there's also a lot of people for competition out there. And so it's a tough market. You need to make yourself stand out. And I think, you know, if they want to travel as we're coming out of the pandemic, if they want to jump in a van and go across the U.S., that they understand that it's okay to do that. And it just gives them more stories to tell in an interview. And so, yeah, I really appreciate you sharing your story with me today. Thanks for listening to VentureSome. I'd love to hear from you about the strategies you're using to get a step ahead, or topics you'd like to hear me cover on the podcast. You can email me at venturesomepodcast@gmail.com or reach out on Twitter @venturesomepod.